What I'm saying is all I really want is someone to hold me and tell me that everything is gonna be all right.
Microphone check 1, 2. What is this? It's the Investopedia Express getting down to business from north to south, the east coast to the Midwest, stopping off in Omaha, giving Warren B. our very best. It's the shareholders meeting, Woodstock for capitalists, a celebration of wealth creation compounding to the maximus. A textile maker bought for $17 million in 63, now worth $860 billion. That's billion with a capital B, U, double F, E, double T. Spell it wrong, you got a buffet, not a dynasty. The modern conglomerate selling insurance and energy, underwear, running gear, net jets, and Dairy Queen, motorhomes, batteries, chocolates, and cowboy hats. Get your Tony Llamas on the train, because Berkshire runs the tracks. From Philly to Santa Fe, BNSF's on time. Get your pinky rings and diamond chains on sale at Borsheim's. But only for shareholders, this club's elite. Investing next to Warren, dining at Piccolo Pete. It's the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting in May. A rite of passage for value investors. You gotta go someday. But you have to be invested class A or class B. And if you missed it this year, come to Omaha with me. Welcome back and welcome aboard. And this train does go through Omaha and we'll take you there in a few minutes. But first,
and it's lights out and away we go.
And away we did go last week as investors heard what they wanted to hear from the Fed and we finally saw a slowdown in the labor market. U.S. employers added 174,000 jobs in April, a lot lower than the 250,000 that were predicted, and the unemployment rate bumped up to 3.9%. Wage growth cooled to just a 0.2% monthly gain, and it finally feels like the jobs market is normalizing, which should pump the brakes on inflation. And while the Federal Reserve held rates steady at its meeting last week, Jerome Powell said the magic words that put the stock market back into high gear.
So I think it's unlikely that the next policy rate move will be a hike. I'd say it's unlikely.
No rate hikes this year. That's a relief. As for the rate cuts a lot of investors were hoping for, well, those expectations have been rekindled. Fed Fund futures traders are now betting on the first rate cut of a quarter point to happen on November 6th. If that were to come to pass, it would mark the longest pause from the last hike to the first cut in history. And the stock market hasn't fallen apart, at least not yet. The economy is getting a little more fragile as consumers have been pulling back on our spending, but the unemployment rate has been below 4% now for 27 straight months, the longest streak since the late 1960s. And now that investors can see through the fog to when rates might ease and corporate profits are looking pretty strong, they got excited about stocks all over again. The S&P 500 added 0.6% on the week, the Dow rose 1.1%, and the NASDAQ popped 1.4%. April ended the month in the red, but May started with a new running of the bulls, and that runs right into our big three for the week. Number one, with the month of April finishing in the red, the S&P 500's five-month winning streak came to an end. While that sounds kind of negative, especially for trend watchers, it's actually a positive from a historical perspective, according to Sentiment Trader. If you go all the way back to the 1920s, like Sentiment Trader did, you'll find that five-month win streaks that come to an end usually trigger a signal for more upside 6 months later. It's that reversion to the mean thing we keep talking about. Pullbacks after consecutive months of gains are not a bug in the markets, even though investors were bugging out in April. They are a feature of secular bull markets. A pause, some profit-taking, some rebalancing and sector rotation, a little spring cleaning, if you will. But after that pause, especially after a five consecutive month rally, the stock market resumes its rally to end higher 6 months later most of the time. Not a guarantee, of course, but a historical trend worth watching, especially after last week's recovery rally. Number two. It ain't easy being a Bored Ape these days, especially around the Yacht Club. You remember those Bored Ape Yacht Club non-fungible tokens that were all the rage back in 2021? One of those Bored Ape NFTs sold for over $24 million in a Sotheby's auction that year, as everyone from Justin Bieber to Paris Hilton were adding them to their collections. Well, evolution is real, and those apes did not age well. As of last week, the floor price for a Bored Ape Yacht Club was around 13.3 ETH. You can only buy NFTs with Ethereum, of course, and 13.3 ETH is right around $40,000. Still seems expensive for a piece of digital art you can't display. The peak floor price back in May of 2022, just 2 years ago, by the way, was $354,000. And Yuga Labs, the creator of the Bored Ape Yacht Club, just announced a new round of layoffs last week with the CEO of the company, Greg Solano, admitting that the NFT maker lost its way. To be sure, not all NFTs are sinking. One anonymous collector just paid $12 million worth of ETH for a CryptoPunk NFT. Punks are in and apes are out. And number three, how are you feeling? Well, we just wrapped up our latest sentiment survey of the smartest readers in the world on Investopedia, and most of you are cautiously optimistic, but your expectations for positive returns over the next 6 months are declining. You've been leaning more heavily into ETFs and CDs rather than stocks, and retail investors like us were not doing a lot of buying last month, and we still see bubbles in AI stocks and megacap tech, but that's not stopping us from putting them on our favorites list. What's worrying us, individual investors? Well, inflation is now topping the list again. 65% said inflation was their number one concern. That's topping the U.S. presidential election, which was number one for several straight months. The war in the Middle East is concerning us as well, as is persistently high interest rates and U.S.-China relations. What would you do with an extra $10,000? Well, 19% say they'd put it into individual stocks. 12% said ETFs, and around 12% said CDs as well. Money market funds and stock index funds picked up the fourth and fifth spot. We also asked you, though, which stock you would buy and hold for the next 10 years. Your top five? Microsoft, NVIDIA, Apple, Amazon, and Berkshire Hathaway. Keep that last stock in mind. Let's get set up for the week ahead, and we're going to get a little bit of a break in the flurry of economic reports and data sets we've been digesting for the past couple of weeks. Fed presidents will be on the speaking circuit throughout the week, making their own cases for cutting rates or leaving them alone, and we'll get a preliminary report on consumer confidence for the month of May. If you listened to the earnings reports from McDonald's and other consumer-facing companies last week, they're telling us that we are pulling back on spending. This week, we'll be listening for more of that mantra from companies including Uber, Tyson Foods, Disney, Airbnb, and AMC Entertainment, to name a few. Speaking of AMC, where did all the apes go? Shares of the OG meme stock have fallen 99% from their highs in 2021. Not a happy ending. For 60 years, shareholders of Berkshire Hathaway have been making the annual pilgrimage to Omaha, Nebraska to hear words of wisdom from Warren Buffett and eventually Charlie Munger, the odd couple who built the company into the $890 billion conglomerate that it is today. Charlie Munger passed away last November at the age of 99, making the 2024 shareholders meeting markedly different from those of the past few decades. But that didn't stop tens of thousands of the Berkshire faithful from coming to America's heartland to hear pearls of wisdom from the Oracle of Omaha. Doors opened at 7 a.m., but thousands of people started lining up at 2:30 in the morning outside the CHI Health Center in Omaha in the cold and rain to get as close as they could to the 93-year-old legend.
Hi, Tim Johnson. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia.
How long have you been waiting online to get into the shareholder meeting?
We got here at 4:30 this morning.
Why so early? Why do you want to get in so quick?
I'm excited to get some good seats, be up close and personal with Warren.
How long have you guys been shareholders?
Only for a couple of years, but my father-in-law here gave his grandkids some shares in the last couple of years, and he's excited to bring them up and give them the experience.
What's your name?
Sandy Sanford.
How long have you been a shareholder?
20 years.
And what do you expect from this year? This is going to be a little different. We have no Charlie, right? Warren sort of passed the reins. What are you expecting from the shareholder meeting?
A little direction on how they're going, and he's going to introduce a couple of guys that have been with him a long time to take Charlie's place. I think it's an endless sage, and then they're going to take Warren's place when he dies, I think.
What do you think Berkshire Hathaway is going to look like 10 years from now?
It'll be bigger than it is now, maybe billion and a half or 2 billion. Trillion.
Yeah, we're talking trillions now, right? The big get bigger. So Warren has said there's nothing out there for them to buy right now. How do you think it's going to get bigger?
Well, I don't know. Maybe we'll have a recession. I'm looking for one so I can buy some more.
You got your grandkids some shares. Do you mind if I ask you guys some questions? What do you know about Warren Buffett? What has your grandpa told you? What have you learned?
He's a billionaire and he owns a lot of companies.
And what is it about being an investor and being a shareholder like Warren that is interesting to you?
Rich. Money.
What about you? What have you learned about Warren Buffett since your grandfather gave you shares?
Yeah, he's just a famous investor, made a lot of money and started Berkshire Hathaway.
Think you'll be a lifelong investor like your grandpa?
Probably.
Thanks for your time, guys. Appreciate it.
Steven Tedder, Atlanta, Georgia.
How long have you been a shareholder?
Since 2011.
How long have you been waiting out here this morning?
We got here about 5:15.
What is it about coming to the shareholder meeting, coming to Omaha, that is special to you, and why do you do it?
The majority of our family net worth is in Berkshire Hathaway, so I feel a responsibility, but also love Warren, love Charlie. I love the birds of the same feather and just learn about life, integrity, and invest. It's beyond investing in business. It's about how to live one's life and be a better shareholder, but also a better human being as well.
What do you think Berkshire Hathaway is going to look like 10 years from now?
I think the culture is very deeply ingrained, so I'm not concerned about how it's going to do financially, and the people that I think that are going to be in succession are going to do a wonderful job. So I don't have much concern about that.
You think you'll be a shareholder 10 years from now? Is this a stock you intend to hold and pass on to your future generation?
Absolutely.
Sylvia Fine, Minneapolis.
Bob Fine, same place.
How long have you been shareholders?
For at least probably a dozen years, maybe 15 years.
What are you expecting from this meeting? Anything different? It's going to be different. We have no Charlie Munger, rest in peace, but it's going to have a little bit of a different tone. What are your expectations?
Well, it'll be interesting not only to memorialize Charlie, but to sort of hear Warren's view because, you know, it's just him at this point. So it's, you know, he's obviously, you'll see what Charlie's influence was on him by what his remarks are.
So you've been a shareholder for quite a while, right?
Yes, I have. Big believer in the company.
What is it about the company you believe in besides Warren Buffett, who is legendary?
Well, I like the way they sort of operate. They buy things differently than most places, and they buy things sort of on a cash basis. They're looking for a return, you know, to build things up and acquire more to keep it going. And I think that's good. That's the way I do things. So
I'm also impressed with the fact that he buys companies that are doing well and doesn't kind of come in and try to micromanage. But he lets the good companies just continue doing the good work that they're doing.
Good companies at fair prices, right?
Right, yeah.
And what do you think Berkshire is going to look like 10 years from now?
I think it's going to be about the same. It's becoming more stagnant in a way because they can't find all these great little companies that they're going to turn into something bigger. I mean, they're buying things more at a retail, on a retail basis than a wholesale. So I think they'll continue. It'll be a slower growth, obviously, than what they've had.
What's your intention for what you'll do with your shares going forward? Will you pass them down to other generations? Will you donate them? What will you do as a shareholder?
I'll donate some, and the rest will go to our kids, and they'll probably sell them.
You won't put a lockup expiration or a lockup on those shares?
I thought about putting them into a trust and leaving them there, but I don't think that'll work.
Sanjay Patel from Dallas, Texas.
How long have you been a shareholder?
10 years, but 20.
You think you'll be a shareholder 10 years from now?
Yes, for sure.
What do you think Berkshire Hathaway will look like 10 years from now?
I'm sure leadership will be different. But I think it will keep going just like it is. We'll see how time unfolds. But I think their basic principles are sound. And as you can see here, there are people who believe in the strategies and the methods that Warren has laid out. So I think it will keep going.
Yeah, there's about 2,000 people that have been lined up since about 4 o'clock in the morning here. When did you get here?
We came here at 6.
What are your expectations for the meeting? What do you want to hear about?
Primarily, it's to meet people who are thinking alike, build some network. It's my third event, so most of the things probably I'm going to hear might have said earlier, but it's more about meeting people, seeing that people believe in this, and having exchange of ideas.
Yeah, this is definitely a tribe. What do you intend to do with your shares going forward? Are you going to pass them down to other generations? Are you going to give them away? What do you think you'll do with your Berkshire Hathaway shares?
Mostly pass over to next generation. That's a good idea, actually. You gave me an idea.
Well, your kids can thank me. Older investors, newer investors, they are believers. And there are but a few companies that have generated this kind of loyalty from their investors. One Class A share of Berkshire Hathaway is now worth $603,000 today. It's never split, and it probably never will. Anyone who invested alongside Warren Buffett when he took control of the New Bedford, Massachusetts-based textile maker in 1965 has seen their shares appreciate by around 207,000%. A $10,000 investment back then would be worth around $207 million today. And the number of Berkshire Hathaway millionaires and billionaires is staggering. But Buffett admits, even today, that it was Charlie Munger, his older friend from Omaha, who was the architect of Berkshire's success and incredible returns. This year's meeting opened with a 20-minute documentary about Charlie Munger's incredible life and their beautiful friendship. Munger used to sit next to Warren on the stage inside the CHI Health Center, the enormous convention center and arena in downtown Omaha, and he was always ready with the one-liner punchline when answering shareholder questions. They were a duo: Batman and Robin, Laverne and Shirley, The Odd Couple, Laurel and Hardy, Buffett the Huckster, and Munger the Zinger. Munger had that unique ability to tell it like it was in very few carefully chosen words that always left the crowd in stitches. Here are a couple of gems from Charlie Munger from past shareholder meetings.
Warren, if people weren't so often wrong, we wouldn't be so rich. Yeah. I like cryptocurrencies a lot less than you do. And I think the people who are professional traders that go into trading cryptocurrencies, it's just disgusting. It's like somebody else is trading turds and you decide I can't be left out.
At one point in the Q&A this Saturday, this young shareholder asked Buffett about his partner and friend.
Hi, my name is Ange Andronikis, and I'm wondering if you had one more day with Charlie, what would you do with him?
This you may find kind of interesting. We had as much fun, perhaps even more to some extent, with things that failed, because then we really had to work and work our way out of them. And in a sense, there's more fun having somebody that's your partner in digging your way out of a foxhole than there is just sitting there and watching an idea that you got 10 years ago just continually produce more and more profit. So
this year, seated next to Buffett, was Ajit Jain, the head of Berkshire's insurance businesses, and Greg Abel, who runs all non-insurance businesses. They are Buffett's self-appointed successors, and while they have excellent track records running their respective operations, they are business operators, not entertainers. Not wanting to upstage Buffett, they focused on the facts and the figures behind their respective operations, and their operations are facing challenges on multiple fronts. Berkshire's enormous insurance holdings, which include consumer brands like Geico, National Indemnity, as well as reinsurance companies like GenRe, are facing rising threats from climate change, man-made disasters, and rising premiums. It's a riskier world, and Berkshire underwrites a lot of risk. Berkshire's non-insurance businesses, which include everything from See's Candies to NetJets to Fruit of the Loom underwear, are always subject to the waxing and waning of consumer sentiment and spending. Its massive equity positions in companies like Coca-Cola, American Express, and Apple, to name a few, are subject to the same risks. While the conglomerate strategy has paid off for Berkshire Hathaway and its shareholders for the past 60 years, investors have to wonder if it will for the next decade and beyond. But if you were inside the annual meeting this year, which is part shareholder meeting, part shopping bonanza, where all the Berkshire brands are selling their goods with a shareholder discount, these investors aren't wondering. They are buying and they are believing. Inside the Berkshire Hathaway annual shareholders meeting in the convention center, all the Berkshire Hathaway portfolio companies are represented. Geico's here selling car insurance and boat insurance. The Gecko's here posing for pictures. Pilot's here with their gas stations and their coffee setup. Borsheim's, of course, here with the jewelry. Brooks, the sneaker manufacturer, is here. Fruit of the Loom and the Fruit of the Loom characters are here selling underwear. Everywhere you look, you see Berkshire Hathaway portfolio companies offering their services to the shareholders who have made a lot of money investing alongside Warren Buffett. What's notable this year at the shareholder meeting is that there are a lot of younger investors, and they're from all over the world. There are groups of investors from Germany, India, China, Japan, Australia, throughout the conference hall here, wandering around, taking pictures, buying merchandise, paying tribute to Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway. Some have only owned shares for a couple of years. Some have had them in their families for years. But this younger generation of Berkshire Hathaway investors and Warren Buffett worshipers, they are here in full force. We caught up with a few of them.
Yilin, I'm from China and now studying at University of Northwestern Kellogg.
Are you a shareholder in Berkshire Hathaway?
Yes.
Why are you a shareholder? What got you into investing in Berkshire?
Well, I think they're very famous for their value investing, and I've been learning about this for a long time. And also today is a big day, really excited to be here to learn more about the inside out of their investment thesis and their philosophy.
And how long have you been a shareholder?
For about 2 years, when I started to have money on myself, I started to invest. Yes.
What do you think Berkshire Hathaway is going to look like 10 years from now?
I think next 10 years would be very fascinating. I do believe in their legacy, and I hope that the next 10 years we'll see some positive. We'll hopefully see the legacy to be passed on.
My name is Feng Fei. I'm from China.
And are you a shareholder here?
Yes.
How long have you been a shareholder of Berkshire Hathaway?
Since last year.
What do you think Berkshire Hathaway is going to look like 10 years from now?
Hopefully a lot of growth and a lot of shareholder returns and responsible investing as well.
So there's going to be some questions about responsible investing on the proxy. There is every year. What do you expect to hear? What do you want to hear from Warren Buffett and the rest of the team?
I'll be curious to learn more about what's his opinion on ESG investing, and hopefully he will allocate more resources on that front.
The legend of Berkshire Hathaway runs through Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger. Their ability to buy great businesses at reasonable prices has rewarded their shareholders handsomely for the past six decades. Since Munger's passing, it has become clear that Buffett, 93 years old, has taken a much more reduced role in running the company he took control of in 1965. That transition has been playing out over the past several years, but at this year's meeting in Omaha, it has become abundantly clear that the future of Berkshire Hathaway is now firmly in the hands of its two vice chairmen, Ajit Jain and Greg Abel. While they may not have the magnetic power of Buffett and Munger, the dynamic duo who welcome thousands of shareholders to their hometown every year, they do have the institutional knowledge and experience that have built the former textile manufacturer into the $890 billion conglomerate it is today. As for Buffett, he's a little slower, but just as sharp as he was a decade ago, or even back in 1965 when he took control of Berkshire Hathaway. As long as he's here in Omaha with us, the faithful will keep coming back every first weekend of May to pay tribute to this investing legend. It's terminology time. Time for us to get smart with the investing and finance term we need to know this week. And this week's term comes to us courtesy of Tim Cook and Apple, and that term is stock buybacks. Not a new one for Express riders, but one worth revisiting given the magnitude of the buyback coming out of Cupertino, California last week. In its earnings release, Apple announced a $110 billion stock buyback, the largest stock buyback program in recent history, and it beat its own record set back in 2018. In fact, Apple owns the top five spots of the biggest stock buybacks of all time. And in case you need a refresher, according to the greatest investing education website that ever crawled the internet, a stock buyback is when a corporation purchases its own shares in the open stock market. A repurchase or buyback reduces the number of shares outstanding, thereby inflating, to the upside, earnings per share, and often the value of the stock. Companies buy back their shares for a variety of reasons. They think their stock is undervalued, and buying it back shows confidence to its shareholders. They want to reduce the amount of shares outstanding, as mentioned, which makes the profits look bigger. Apple has 15.3 billion shares outstanding, among the highest of all public companies. Or the company has no better use for its cash, and Apple has $162 billion in cash on hand. A buyback could be for all these reasons, but you gotta wonder if Warren Buffett, whose Berkshire Hathaway is Apple's largest shareholder and a big fan of buybacks, by the way, knew that buyback was coming before he sold off 116 million shares, or 13% of his Apple holdings last quarter. Buffett defended the share sale at the annual meeting this weekend, and Tim Cook, Apple CEO, was front and center in Omaha and got a standing ovation. In fact, Buffett called the iPhone one of the greatest inventions of all time. That was all a little bit weird, but Berkshire is still Apple's largest shareholder, and those companies, as they say, have been very good to each other. As for Berkshire Hathaway and its buybacks, well, the company repurchased $9.2 billion of its own stock last year, down from a high of $27 billion worth in 2021. Thanks for joining us this week, as always, and for riding through Omaha on the Express. I've been going to that annual meeting on and off for the past 25 years or so, and I always meet fascinating people and learn new things. It was sad not to have Charlie Munger in the room next to Warren, but all good things must come to an end, and Charlie had 99 good years to be grateful for. As for Buffett, who knows if we're going to see him on that stage next year, popping cans of Coca-Cola and eating See's nut fudge chocolates? I sure hope so. Let's let the Oracle of Omaha take us out this week. Here he is, closing the Berkshire Hathaway 2024 Annual Shareholders Meeting.
Thank you very, very much for coming. And I not only hope that you come next year, but I hope I come next year. Thank you.